Congratulations. You found it.
You know what time it is.
This is New York Game Day. It's 3 hours of the most informative and entertaining NFL news in the league. Now here's former NFL defensive lineman Chris Canty, former Jets GM and ESPN insider Mike Tannenbaum, and your host, Anita Marks.
Welcome in. Baby, can you believe it? And both New York teams are 0-2. Chris Canty, Anita Marks, Mike Tannenbaum. Mike is new to the program. Chris and I have been doing this program for... Chris, don't you feel like this is Groundhog's Day? Like, aren't we here each and every year with the Giants and the Jets for the past few years we've been hosting this show? They stink it up at the beginning of the season. I mean, this is nothing new for us, right, dude?
No, this is absolutely nothing new. And Anita, I'm tired of these New York football teams being in a perpetual rebuild. You're looking for one of these teams to come out of it. And I know Bill Parcells used to always say, your record is what it is. That's who you are as a team. But I feel like there's a different 0-2 vibe around the Jets than there is the Giants. And I know we're going to dive a little further into that. But, I mean, at some point, these teams have got to be a little more competitive and we got to have some tangible results in the way of wins.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into it. And that's the Giants. Guys, I mentioned this on my fantasy show. Granted, it's fantasy and you know, I'm into gambling. But here's what I don't understand. You've got a 49ers team that's coming back to MetLife Stadium. Dudes don't want to play. They don't want to step a toe. And I'm really curious. I want to get your thoughts on the field, Chris. They don't want to step a toe on this field. They got decimated last week against the Jets, not because of anything the Jets did, but the turf that they're playing on out there had a lot to do with a number of the injuries. They did not go back to the West Coast. They went down to Virginia. They hung out in Virginia for a week. Their roster is decimated. Their defense, offense, no Jimmy Garoppolo. Both they're starting, you know, it's really a three-man back there, but it's McKinnon and Jeff Wilson today. No Greg Kittle. Where I'm going with this is, guys, this is a JV football team that doesn't even want to be here to begin with. They don't want to play this game. They don't want to get back on that field. How are the Giants still getting 3.5? Chris, I'll start with you. Explain that to me. How are the Giants still getting 3.5 against a JV football team? I just don't get it.
Anita, I can't explain it. It's why I made the Giants one of my picks this week in our pick segment in DCR. But I love the Giants getting 3.5 because they're going up against the 49ers by name. This is not the same San Francisco 49ers team that lined up in the Super Bowl against the Chiefs this past February. You're talking about a team that's missing 40% of their salary cap. 40% of their salary cap is not playing. They're going to be down 10 key guys on that squad, including Nick Bosa, including D Ford and Solomon Thomas. I'm trying to figure out, if you're the 49ers, how you're going to be able to generate a pass rush. I mean, it's Eric Armstead and then everybody else. And so I'm interested to see how that turns out. But I think that creates a unique opportunity for Daniel Jones and that offense to get on track.
Yeah, and for me, I'll tell you what's interesting is if you're Dave Gettleman and Joe Judge and you could play a game of, hey, we could take away the best players of the opposing team, I'm not so sure it would look any different when you really think about it's their starting quarterback, it's their best player in, as you mentioned, Nick Bosa. George Kittle may be their next best player. It's really remarkable the quality of players. You know, Chris, you quantify it from a cap standpoint, but just from a talent standpoint, it's really remarkable. I think what's interesting is the reason I give the 49ers the edge is it's a system. It's about a system and a culture that Kyle Shanahan's done a remarkable job of. And I'm encouraged if I'm a Giant fan because I thought they were competitive against the Steelers. They went down to the last play of the game against the Bears. And I know, as Chris said, you are what your record is. But when you compare where the Jets are to the Giants, I just think the Giants right now were competitive. I don't expect them to win today because I think they're really feeling their way offensively. And to me, it comes back to this, guys. Greatness is defined by how you impact others. If Daniel Jones wants to be great and the franchise quarterback, there's no Eli Manning, there's no Saquon Barkley, the pen is in your hands, and what do you want people to write about you? And this could be an opportunity for him because, as you alluded to, Chris, this is not the same 49er defense. It's still a good one. It's still well-coached by Robert Saleh. But if I'm a Giant fan, what I want to see today is that this is the Daniel Jones New York Giants moving forward.
It's really interesting. You mentioned, of course, I mean, listen, we're already 7 minutes in. We really haven't even dove into the fact that Saquon Barkley is out. So what can we expect today? Now, of course, we know that the Giants went out and signed Devontae Freeman. Mike, I'm curious to get your thoughts on that deal that they agreed to with him. I know a big reason why he wasn't picked up on other teams was because his asking price, a lot of teams felt that his asking price was too high. But this is what I'm expecting in the backfield today. I'm expecting when Barkley went down, Deion Lewis came in 100% of the snaps he took. Curious, Chris, and I want you to comment on this. You know, short preparation week because they did sign him today. How up to speed do you think Freeman's going to be? I was talking to a friend who covers the Giants who said that the scheme that Jason Garrett plays is one that Freeman is extremely knowledgeable and comfortable in. So I'm curious what you think the usage is going to be with Freeman, but I'm expecting a lot of Deion Lewis today, not only in the backfield, but utilizing the passing game because there's no Sterling Shepard. So, Mike, let's start with you. Your thoughts on the deal with Devontae Freeman for the Giants?
Well, I thought it was a good deal. I thought it was them being opportunistic. You know, typically somebody of his caliber shouldn't be out there this late in the game. So I agree with you. I thought it was smart. It was opportunistic for them. I think he could be a three-down back once he gets settled into the offense again. You don't want to put out players before they're really comfortable from a pass protection standpoint. And as you alluded to, Anita, that's something that Deion Lewis has done. He should be able to do. But you go back a year ago, Devontae Freeman had 59 catches. Like, this guy is a three-down back. He's productive when healthy. I don't know. I've always been a fan of his because I've just seen him be a guy that can run between the tackles, can make you miss, can run you over. So I think he has every skill set in his bag. I just think it's going to take a couple weeks. And as you said, the Giants are not only missing Barkley, but also Shepard. So somebody else is going to have to step up. The guy that, to me, that's been intriguing watching the Giants is Darius Slayton. I think he's the guy that they could hopefully, in the next couple weeks, we're talking about, like, who's emerging. And that's, to me, if I'm a Giant fan, that's the name I'm going to keep an eye on, Darius Slayton.
Yeah, Darius
Slayton. He's going to have a
Darius
big day.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to have a big day, too. He's going to get a lot more targets than needed with Saquon Barkley being out of the game, as well as Sterling Shepard. But to your earlier question about how much Devonta Freeman is going to be a factor in this game, Anita, I mean, he's a running back. I mean, he's been running the ball ever since Pop Warner, so that's something that he knows how to do. I'm with Mike T. I think the one concern that you have is whether or not he's been able to pick up the protections on third downs and some of the things that they're going to do when they open up the set. But as far as first and second down productivity, I think he's got to be the lead back for the New York Giants starting today. And Wayne Gallman and Deion Lewis as change of pace guys. I expect Jason Garrett to have multiple tight end sets to be able to shore up some of those edges because Daniel Jones is one of the most pressured. Let me rephrase that. Daniel Jones is the most pressured quarterback in the National Football League. He's pressured on 41% of his dropbacks. Wow. So at some point, you have to look at it and say, okay, we've got to protect our guy in order to give him an opportunity to utilize the weapons that's around him and try to elevate the play of everyone around him. And so I think that's where it starts, being able to help out those young tackles. And in order to do that, if you put tight ends in proximity and allow them to chip on those defensive ends and those outside linebackers before they get on the route, I think Daniel Jones will have more of an opportunity to put his imprint on the game.
You know, Chris, that is not by accident, that statistic. Just to put some context around it, when you talk to, you know, defensive coordinators and they're playing against talented young quarterbacks like we are with Daniel Jones, you hear this term quite a bit. We're going to speed up their clock. And for the fans out there, what that really means is they want to make Daniel Jones process and get to 1 to 2 quicker and get through his progressions. And that's where Daniel Jones has struggled, where he's made mistakes, where people have tried to speed up his clock. And the only way to do it, and I saw it firsthand, unfortunately for me, was with guys like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, was they would throw you out of pressure. And what I mean by that is when you send more than four and you put more pressure on your secondary, the best way to get people out of pressure is you throw them out of it, meaning you get big chunk plays. And for Daniel Jones, there's going to be an opportunity when these guys are singled up outside and he's going to have to get the ball in his hands, make the right decision, make a good throw, and that'll slow down the pass rush. But right now, you know, we're talking, Chris, you brought up 41%. That number is only going to get higher until he could prove consistently that he can make the right decision, get the ball out with accuracy, and let those guys on the outside make plays. When that happens, we'll see the number come down.
And you know what? One of the other things that's going to help that number come down, Mr. T, is the Giants being able to have more balance on the offensive side of the ball. Because I really think that the Giants have put Daniel Jones in an adverse circumstance when you have down and distances like he's been facing. When you're talking about, you know, second and nine or third and seven, defenses know, okay, when you're in those down to distances, you're probably going to be throwing the football to try to get back on schedule. One of the most important things for the Giants offense is that they've got to be able to try to win first down just so they can have manageable second downs and third downs. That's another way to alleviate some of the pressure, being able to make sure that you have the entire playbook open, because once you get into second and nine, third and seven, it becomes tough for a young quarterback. It allows those defensive coordinators to use those exotic blitz packages out of sub-defenses. So I think that's another way that Jason Garrett can help his young quarterback.
Gentlemen, quick break. We come back. Let's dive into what's going on with the Jets. They just got destroyed by the 49ers. Now they head to Indianapolis to take on a Colts team with, really, Sam Darnold, not a lot to work with. I hosted for 4 hours yesterday here on 98.7 ESPN, and wall-to-wall calls from our listeners in, it's interesting. We as human beings, we like to assign blame, right? So is it Sam Darnold is not who we thought he was? He can't be that franchise quarterback? Or is it, man, Sam Darnold has to get out of the Adam Gase tutelage and the Jets need a new head coach? It's one or the other. So, and I know I feel like this is our third week, and it's a reoccurring conversation that we're having. And I think we will continue to do that as long as the Jets continue to lose and we see this type of offensive performance. So we'll dive into that next, and we'll take your calls. We've got Buddha and Ira standing by as well. So we'll talk some Jets. By the way, I want to mention as well, as I said just a second ago, the Giants are getting 3.5. Chris just talked about them getting the points. Not only that, man, how about the money line? The Jets, they're getting 11.5 on the road. Oh, my goodness gracious. We'll be right back. 98.7 ESPN.
Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
I think Adam Gase's seat is a little bit hotter, of course. You think about Joe Douglas coming in. He really, they're friends, and Gase got him the job. But at the end of the day, I don't think that they're linked with each other. That's still like a arranged marriage as well. I think Adam Gase, if he doesn't turn this thing around, could be out of here in a short order.
That is Bart Scott. You listen to Bart and Han Monday through Friday right here on 98.7 ESPN. Gentlemen, in regard to the Jets, they're 0-2. They're coming into this game against the Colts. Like I said, they're getting 11.5 on the road against the Colts. Injured wide receiving core, no Crowder, no Perryman, heavy dose of Chris Hogan, and hopefully Chris Herndon can do something today. Frank Gore in the backfield. I'm not expecting much from this Jets team. Chris, what are your thoughts on this game?
Well, I think first and foremost for the Jets on defense, they've got to be able to stop the run. Any game plan that I've gone into in my 11 years in the National Football League starts with stopping the run, and they didn't do a very good job of that against the 49ers. Raheem Mostert takes the first handoff and 80 yards. He hits his head on the goalpost. The Jets defense have got to be able to shore up their run fits. They've got to be able to set the edge of the defense, and then they've got to rally to the football. They can't allow Jonathan Taylor to run wild. You saw what he was able to do against that Minnesota Vikings defense, and they're going to feature him more after he's shown that he can carry a heavy workload. So I look for Jonathan Taylor to get the ball early and often, and if the Jets want to have any chance of making this a competitive game, they got to be able to slow him down.
Yeah, I see that similar to Chris, you know, from a standpoint that teams are going to run the ball until you can prove that you can stop it. And I think what was most disheartening last week was, if you go back literally like 30 years, Mike Shanahan was a guy that ran an outside zone toss perimeter run game. That's something that he just philosophically believes, going back to the Broncos and getting guys like Jake Plummer. I mean, going back decades. And on the very first play of the game, Kyle Shanahan, Mike's son, runs a staple play, same exact scheme, perimeter toss play. Raheem Mostert goes 80 yards. And to me, if I'm a player, not to get touched is just absolutely disheartening. So if I'm on the opposing side and I'm Frank Reich and I'm Nick Sirianni and I'm designing the plays for Indianapolis this week, I'm saying we're going to run the ball every single time until they can prove they could stop it. So I agree with Chris. And if I'm Greg Williams, you know, I'm known as a guy that schemed great pressure in my career. And Greg Williams has done a lot of good things. I don't want to minimize some of his accomplishments. But until they can prove they can stop the run, Jonathan Taylor's a great player. I thought that was a really, really good pick. He's a three-down back from Wisconsin. He's tough. He's smart. And I agree. This game could be really simple. This could be a 36, 37-minute time of possession game for Indy. Now, I think on the other side of the ball, one bright spot for the Jets has been Quinnen Williams. I think he's flashed. I think he's shown that why he was, you know, a top-five pick. And that, to me, is where the game begins, is up front on the defensive line of the Jets.
So, gentlemen, your thoughts, and again, you know, I don't know about you. I'm not expecting much from this Jets team this season. And so the conversation then turns to the future of the franchise and the future of the organization. And like I said, when we went into break, you know, there's fans kind of want to assign blame. Let's start with Sam Darnold. Okay, Chris, in regard to what you've seen from Sam Darnold so far this season, is the jury still out for you in regard to can he be the face of a franchise and a franchise quarterback for the Jets organization? Are you sold that he is and he's just been dealt a pretty bad hand? Or is the jury still out for you that Sam Darnold is a franchise quarterback? Where do you stand with that?
Well, Anita, Sam is so hard to evaluate. I mean, coming into this season, we said that this was a huge year for him, that he had to prove that he was going to take that next step as a player and graduate to one of those guys that can be a force multiplier. And by that, I mean make everybody around him better. And through the first two games, that has not been the case. Now, you can point to all the different things that have been happening throughout the organization since he got here. But ultimately, if you keep having to ask the question about it, eventually you're going to land on the answer being no. And so regardless of the personnel around Sam, the injuries that he's been dealing with, or the question marks around the head coach, I mean, Sam has got to show that he can be the franchise quarterback. And if he doesn't, I think Joe Douglas is going to have some tough decisions that he's faced with this offseason. Right now, the Jets are evaluating everything. They're evaluating coaching. They're evaluating their players because they've got to be able to chart a path forward. And clearly the Jets are a long ways off from being a team that can be consistently competitive. So it's a tough circumstance for Sam, but he's got to play better than what we've seen the first two games of this season.
Yeah, and just to add on that, I'm a big believer in the tape sets the floor, meaning your baseline talent is the floor, your character sets the ceiling. Here's where it's a little bit of a mixed bag for me on Darnold, because I scouted him coming out. He's not a good kid. He's a great kid, comes from great parents, great background, really good work ethic. You know, he had 22 interceptions in college, and I haven't seen a lot to say, boy, that's going to be much better in the pros. Now, it's still early, and the quarterback position is a developmental position. And we could go back a week ago. Baker Mayfield looked really good, really poised in a scheme where it was two really good running backs in Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and he got outside the pocket, and he made some really good throws down the field, Odell Beckham in particular. And my point is, as they put pieces around him, and if Le'Veon Bell was healthy and Jamison Crowder was healthy, you know, could he function and be a productive winning quarterback? And I think if we're looking at it in a very objective way right now, we have to give it a grade of incomplete. I am concerned about the interceptions thus far, but let's just see how it goes. He's still in the very early part of his career.
You know, it was interesting. We were hearing Bart Scott address the relationship between Joe Douglas and Adam Gase. And Mike, if you can kind of clue us in, like how first of all, just confirm with us that Adam Gase was lobbying for Joe D to come in and be the general manager, true or not. And second part of that question is, when that type of situation happens in the NFL, how difficult is it for a general manager who knows that that head coach was a big part of him getting the job and then turn around and maybe if he doesn't feel that he's the right fit, how does he go about making that change? This is a very interesting dynamic, I believe, that exists here between Joe D, Adam Gase, and the Johnson family. Agree or disagree, Mike?
Yeah, well, I wasn't involved with that search, so I candidly can't say, you know, who lobbied for what. I wasn't part of it. I was at ESPN. But what I can say is, you know, I've been part of hiring coaches, making in-season changes. And the last time that happened to me was 2015, where we had a really likable guy in Miami in Joe Philbin. He was hired by somebody that was there before I got there. And we kept saying to ourselves, you know, do we feel like it could get better? And we were extraordinarily patient and felt ultimately that Dan Campbell, who is a really good young coach, former tight end, who I still believe will be a head coach in the NFL, was on the staff. And we made the change. And
really tough guy, by the way, Mike T. Really tough guy. I played with Dan Dallas. Let me tell you something, man. That guy got after it. He's one of the tight ends that could actually run block and move defensive linemen off the ball.
And Chris, to this day, he still looks like he can. So
yeah, exactly.
And that's candidly, you know, it's funny, Chris, that's how we played. We were tough on both sides of the ball, and Dan became a finalist for the job in 2016. And what I would say is I'm always going to err on the side of patience, and Adam Gase has been with the Jets for a little over a year. So they didn't hire him for a one-year job. Now, with that said, do I think it has to get better? Of course I do. Like, I'm watching it like everybody else is. But I always would err on the side of patience, because when you made the decision last year, you said that it's Adam Gase and it's Sam Darnold. Let them grow and develop together. And growing and developing means there's going to be a lot of bumps in the road. We could go back to Tony Dungy with the Buccaneers or Peyton Manning with the Colts. There's, you know, so many examples of guys where it just takes a while. Eli Manning. There's so many examples where it just takes people a while. Now, with that said, in this town in particular, where everything is times 10, and you guys know as well as I do, when it's great, it's times 10. When it's bad, it's times 10. They do need to show a little bit, I would say, a modicum of just holding the fort, that old Parcells term of, like, we're going to be solid, we're going to be well-coached, we're not going to turn it over, we're not going to have penalties. And if we could see that, in my opinion, I think that'll help take the noise down.
Mr. T, let me ask you this question. When you're evaluating a head coach, do you take into consideration his entire body of work? Like, are you looking at the 3 years down in Miami as well as what he's done these past 2 years with the Jets? Because, I mean, I guess the question becomes, you know, is there enough of a sample size to be able to determine whether or not Adam Gase is a good head coach in the National Football League?
You know, Chris, that's a very fair question. I think, you know, somewhat. Now, look, you could go back to Miami and say, hey, he took us to the playoffs in year one. So, and that's obviously a discussion for another day. But I think when you're evaluating a coach, it's just like with a player. You want to sit down and say, here are the two or three things we have to focus on. What's your detailed plan to make progress in these two or three areas? So, hey, it's third down on offense. It's first down run defense, whatever it may be. And we need to see discernible, objective progress in these two to three indices for you to continue. And let's have this conversation, which is really hard, because what we're trying to do is avoid that other conversation that neither you nor I want to have. So we're going to focus on this conversation and work our tails off collectively to get better. But here's what needs to change. Let's figure out what that plan is, because that other conversation is a path nobody wants to go down.
Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
I feel good. I feel good. Borderline great. and I'd say, you know, again, you know, my job is to move the football, get first downs, possess the ball, score points, right? And so however we can do that, we're going to do it. I am focused on putting us in position to succeed, you know, making great decisions, both in the run game and the pass game, you know, whatever is predicated on, you know, my decision, my ability to get us into the best play, and our ability to, you know, take care of the football and go and score points, put us in the best position to win, play complementary ball with our defense and special teams as well.
That is Drew Brees. A lot of question marks this week based on that game, the loss against the Las Vegas Raiders. and a lot of criticism in regard to velocity. And, you know, is he stretching the ball downfield? Is he throwing the ball downfield? Is that a big reason why the Saints lost to the Raiders? Yada, yada, yada. And him having to come out this week and defend himself. Anita Marks, Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum. This is Chalk Talk, brought to you by FW Webb and Wheel McLean. Guys, it's one of the top storylines, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to take our tour around the NFL and talk about some of the top storylines heading into week three. And Mike, why don't we start with you? You know, your thoughts on Drew Brees, and do you feel that maybe this is just a year too late in regard to him deciding to retire? Do you still believe that Drew Brees has what it takes to take this Saints team to the postseason, let alone win a Super Bowl this year?
I don't. He should have retired. And just to take you behind the scenes, guys, without question, one of the hardest decisions to make as a general manager and a head coach is when you're vested emotionally and personally with somebody like Sean Payton and Drew Brees. And just think about that. You've had over a decade of success. You've seen, you know, birth of children. You've seen kids graduate. You've seen family members, unfortunately, pass away. You've been through so much, and you have, like, this deep-seated, emotionally rooted relationship. And we're human, right? And it's hard for Mickey Loomis, their GM, and Sean Payton, their head coach, to say, does he give us the best chance to win? And not to oversimplify things, but when you look at yards per pass attempt, which is a meaningful statistic, and Chris, you know that as a former professional defensive player, he's at 6.94 yards per attempt, which is 22nd in the NFL. Who's the best in the league? Lamar Jackson. And if we were drafting quarterbacks now, that sounds about where they would go. One's the best, one's one of the worst. And when the field is compressed and you can't get the ball down the field, I promise you, if I know that, the opposing team's defensive coordinator that spends all week preparing is going to compress the field and say, for Drew Brees to win, throw it over my head, and they don't have Michael Thomas. So I think it's a hard decision. It's a decision that was made a year too late. And I think Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston today give them a better chance to win. And I can say that because I'm unemotional. I'm not in the building every day. I don't have those relationships that they have with Drew Brees.
Yeah, and to your point about being able to stretch the field, Mr. T, Drew Brees is tied for 31st out of 32 quarterbacks with Sam Darnold for the number of deep ball attempts. So, you're talking about targets of 20 yards or more downfield. Drew Brees has only had three such targets the entire year. So, I mean, I know we're only talking about two games, but you'd expect the quarterback to be able to challenge the defense downfield a little bit more consistently. And if you don't have a quarterback that's capable of doing that with any degree of accuracy, then your offense is going to struggle because teams are going to put more defenders in the short and intermediate zones. And so I think that's one of the things that Sean Payton has got to try to find a way to scheme around, because they're going to give Drew Brees every opportunity to come out of it, to play his way out of it, because let's face it, they really don't have any other choice in terms of the quarterback spot if they want to truly be a title contender. I'm not sold on Taysom Hill being the heir apparent, being the guy, and we all saw what Jameis Winston did last year, becoming the first 30-for-30 quarterback, and not in a good way. So I just look at Drew Brees, and I think that you have to be concerned if you're a Saints fan, because this is supposed to be Super Bowl or bust year. That's the reason why he came back. And quite frankly, I don't think you have a quarterback that's capable of allowing you to compete at the highest level. And let's just go back to the last two postseason games, the last two postseasons where the Saints played in, they were ousted because of mistakes from their quarterback.
Gentlemen, let's talk about a quarterback who's actually getting a lot of praise, and that is Russell Wilson. And right now, guys, he's favored to win the MVP this season with the odds makers in Vegas. Keep in mind, this is a guy that has not received not one vote for MVP in his career, and now he's favored to win it this year. So, Chris, let's start with you. I love what we've seen from Russell Wilson, Mr. Unlimited. I'm all about it. I threw some coin on it myself this week. Thoughts on Russell Wilson, what you've seen from Seattle, and do you think he wins the MVP this season, Chris?
Yeah, I think he wins the MVP. There's a lot of chatter around it early, and a big part of being able to take home that hardware is being able to create the narrative early and have that on the forefront of the national conscience. And I think Russell Wilson has done that. I mean, to think that he's never gotten an MVP vote is absolutely ridiculous up until this point, because he's been one of the top three or four quarterbacks in this league the past 5 years. So Just the way that he's playing and the way that Seattle is opening up their offense, I'm excited about it. I mean, DK Metcalf has turned into a true number one receiver, worked on his route running, worked on some of the firing points, some of the nuanced things. And not to mention, he's just a beast when it comes to challenging for those 50-50 balls and going up against defenders. So to see him go to work on Stephon Gilmore last week in a primetime matchup, that was impressive for me. To me, that was the moment where DK Metcalf grew up. And now we're talking about Russell Wilson having a true number one receiver. I'm excited to see what he and that offense can become this year.
Yeah, I don't see it much differently. And I think the big difference when I watch Russell Wilson play, he doesn't scramble to make a first down. He scrambles to put a dagger in your heart. And, boy, is he getting the ball down the field. And when you can do that and you're a full field quarterback, it puts such pressure on the defense. And now you can make plays with your feet when necessary. He's completing 82% of his passes, 9 touchdowns. And the one pick was a Greg Olsen tip pass. So this guy is basically pitching a perfect game through 2 games. And, you know, the only thing that I would say that is going to prevent him from winning the MVP is this whole notion of an East Coast bias, and we all have it, myself included, which is you watch a lot of these games. You know, it happens in college where you don't see a lot of these West Coast games that are late at night, and, you know, because there's so much more media coverage in the Northeast and the eastern part of the country with our sport that beyond that, he is clearly, if you were drafting players based on how they played this season through 2 games, you know, there's a couple other players you could put into that conversation, but clearly to me it's Russell Wilson.
Mr. T, to your point about how good he is throwing the ball down the field, Russell Wilson, 6 deep ball attempts, 5 completions, 4 touchdowns.
Whew.
The next closest person only has 2 touchdowns. That's how deadly Russell Wilson is with throwing the ball deep. So if this Seattle Seahawks offense can keep this up and then show the ability to be able to run the football as efficiently as they have in years past, they're going to be a tough act to stop.
Another quarterback, Tyrod Taylor, in the news this week. Unfortunately, I mean, guys, could you imagine this? A team doctor punctures your lung with a cortisone shot. Unbelievable.
Well, I don't know if it was a cortisone shot.
Some type of pain reliever shot,
it
right?
It was the lidocaine shot. And lidocaine,
there
saying,
you go.
Could you imagine it? Yes, I could. If you've ever seen the lidocaine needle that they use,
when you start talking
about rib injuries, I can absolutely see how that's possible, because I had to deal with that same issue when I was a player. I had some bruised rib cartilage, and they gave me the lidocaine shot. They spray this substance on your ribs to kind of numb you up, and then they inject you with the shot. And when you look at that needle, it's scary. It's scary.
I know,
so
it's
I
brutal.
I can absolutely see how that's possible.
But, man, to puncture a lung, though. Oh, my God. Anyway, so Tyrod Taylor, last minute, doesn't start. Now, what I found really, really impressive is, you know, Herbert comes in last minute, didn't have a lot of time going up against, you know, the scout team. Didn't really have a lot of time at training camp, because Anthony Lynn came out and said that Tyrod Taylor was going to be the starting quarterback day one. Comes in, goes up against an impressive Kansas City team that won the Super Bowl, and just like his throws looked effortless. He looked calm, cool as a cucumber out there. Mike, I said this in the draft, and again, this isn't a diss on Tua. I think Tua has the potential to be a good quarterback. I'm so worried about his health issues with his hip and his legs and his foot and his all that. I said the Dolphins are going to regret not drafting Herbert. He gets the start today for the Chargers against a really bad Carolina Panthers defense. I can't say enough things how impressed I was with this young man. Let's start with you, Mike. Thoughts on Herbert and what you're expecting from him today? And if he does win and he has a convincing win, do you think the Chargers need to stick with him?
Yeah, you know, Anita, I've been out in front of that with you. I scouted him for 2 years. I thought he was going to come out the year before my last year in Miami, mm-hmm. so I went to go see him in person. He really reminds me of Ben Roethlisberger because of his size, and he's a much better athlete than people realize. He was a 4-year player there. He was actually a TA in some classes. Like, he's very smart, comes from a great family. He checks all the boxes to me. I was actually very popular last year in Eugene, Oregon, because I came out before the season, said I thought he was going to win the national champion, the Heisman Trophy, would be the first pick overall. So I got into the conversation there a little bit. If Oregon could have just held on against Auburn, it could have been even I could have been even closer on that. So I'm with you, Anita, on him. I think what's really interesting is, and I know Anthony Lynn very well, I had the privilege of working with him, is ordinarily I would say you have to give the job to the hot hand, especially if he plays well. But how in good conscience, if you're the head coach, can you walk into your team meeting and say, hey, I'm going to bench the starting quarterback and our team doctor made a mistake? I think that's a really hard conversation to have. So, look, let's hope Justin Herbert plays well. Let's hope Tyrod Taylor gets back as quickly as possible. I just think given this unforeseen circumstance, I think if you're the head coach, it's really hard to bench that player.
It is hard to bench him, Mr. T, but I think it makes it a little bit easier when you see Justin Herbert perform the way that he did, because a lot of veterans in that locker room are looking around and saying, hey, if the kid can play like that, we can win with that. And that's really all guys want to do. They want to be put in positions to win. And if you're getting good quarterback play like Justin Herbert gave you in that Chiefs game, obviously you have a chance to win. I mean, if you can go head-to-head with the Super Bowl champs and have that game come down to the wire in overtime, to me, I guess there's a lot to like when you look at the young quarterback. Now, it sucks for Tyrod Taylor. It's a terrible way to lose your job. But we all know at some point this was going to be Justin Herbert's position. Like, at some point this season, they were going to pass the reins to him, and you just thought it would be a lot later on. But due to unforeseen circumstances, we saw him a lot earlier than we expected.
You know, really quick, I just want to share with you, Chris, you know how much I love the Combine. And I think Mike, we ran into each other at a Starbucks line, right? Didn't we?
I believe we did.
It's my favorite week of the year because I get such wealth of information. And I had a friend of mine who was I don't want to say tutoring, but like, you know, mentoring Herbert in his week at the Combine. And he was told to not answer the last few questions. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, Mike. He was told not to answer the last few questions on the Wunderlich test because he didn't want to come across as being too smart. Have you heard that before? I mean, and from what I understand, he did. I mean, he put up some excellent numbers in the Wunderlich test, and apparently he didn't answer like the last, I think, like 5 or 7 questions because he didn't want to come across as being, quote unquote, too smart.
Yeah, you hear that a little bit. I think that's a little bit overplayed. Like, to me, like, come on. Like, the object of the exercise is to evaluate these guys. So, and the Wunderlich is part of the narrative. And candidly, if someone doesn't do well in the Wunderlich, all that does is it's a flag to say, hey, let's do more work, because people learn differently. People have different backgrounds. So I always try to minimize any sort of, like, if there was just like one sort of like indication of something. So, but I understand your point. I've heard other people say it. I think that's a little ridiculous personally though.
Right. And guys, I guess I kind of buried the lead here today. Right. And that is Monday Night Football. Are you kidding me? You've got the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes going up against Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. So much is riding on this game, guys, because I feel that whoever wins this game has a clear path of being the number one seed in the AFC, and of course now with the new structure of the playoffs, gets that first round bye. How can you not love this Baltimore Ravens team? You know, the Baltimore Ravens, the only team in the league that has yet to run an offensive play while trailing. That's how good they are. Adding Calais Campbell to their defense, I think they'll slow down Patrick Mahomes. And on the opposite side, for the Kansas City Chiefs, their rushing defense has not been great. They rank 30th in the NFL in yards that they've given up from scrimmage, and they've allowed both Deshaun Watson and Justin Herbert to score rushing touchdowns. I'm all over the Ravens. The Ravens are favored by 3.5. Some people don't like that hook because they think that this is going to be close, but I am all in on the Ravens. Curious to get you guys what your thoughts, how you see this Monday Night Football game getting played out. Chris, let's start with you.
Anita, you said something that was interesting. The Baltimore Ravens had yet to run an offensive play when trailing, and quite frankly, that's where I want to see him. Like, I want to see the growth of Lamar Jackson as a quarterback that can win consistently from the pocket, because we know that if they're going to go on a playoff run and contend for a championship, at some point there's going to be some adversity, and you're probably going to be trailing on the scoreboard. How does your offense look when you get to that point? I know Greg Roman wants to be patient with the run game, and that's the identity of this team. But at some point, your MVP quarterback is going to have to make some throws to get you back in games. That's where I want to see the evolution of Lamar Jackson. You look at what the Kansas City Chiefs did last year. In all three of their playoff games, including the Super Bowl, they were trailing. And I want to say they had double-digit deficits. And they were able to overcome those. And that's thanks to Pat Mahomes being able to push the ball down the field and make plays in the passing game and being able to win consistently from the pocket. So that's the part of this that I want to see. This is going to be a great matchup. But for some strange reason, I don't think this is going to be the last time we see these two teams face off this season.
Yeah, and if for all those future and aspiring young GMs, like take a great page out of the Baltimore Raven team-building playbook. You know, they're missing a couple of pieces in their secondary. You know, they moved on from Earl Thomas. Tavon Young is out with his knee. And they still have Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Peters, and Jimmy Smith. That's great depth in the secondary, and I don't know how many other teams could survive what they've survived. Hats off to the Ravens for how they've built that team. I think there's a couple of small, slight edges here. One is that secondary that I just mentioned. And I also think the run game of the Ravens is slightly better, taking nothing away from Edwards or Lair, but the combination of Ingram and Dobbins I think will allow them to control the game. And I give the slight edge to Baltimore. Now, if it was a normal circumstance, that place would really be loud, and I think the other day, Chris, I used the term popping. I think it should be a great game. I would think we're going to see something very similar to what we saw the other night with the New England-Seattle game. Let's put the ball on the one-yard line, fourth down, give it to Lamar, give it to Patrick, and let's sit back and watch. And as fans of the sport, what's better than that? And that's why when you know we talk about the NFL, we talk about guys like Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, the future is so bright. You know, we have great young quarterbacks that, you know, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton, they're in their 30s and they're still both playing at such a high level. So I think it should be a great game, very, very competitive.
I'd also be interested to see, Mr. T, whether or not the Kansas City Chiefs can run the ball against the Baltimore Ravens. Because, I mean, you saw them take Clyde Edwards-Helaire with the first-round pick, and you saw how they involved him in the passing game, but as well as the run game. And I know they want to have more balance on the offensive side of the ball, Andy Reid, just for Pat Mahomes to be able to protect them a little bit. I'd be interested to see if they're going to be able to run the football against the Baltimore Ravens, because that's a really tough front led by Brandon Williams and Calais Campbell.
Yeah, no,
I can't wait for this game. I really can't. You know, I mean, I'd ask the question, you know, what's the one game you're looking most forward to this week? I think it's pretty evident and obvious. It's that Monday night game, right, guys?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, this could be a preview of the AFC Championship game. I would put Tennessee in this conversation just because I'm a big believer in Tannehill. And over the last 2 years, they've really played consistently well when he's been in there. But clearly, this could be a preview of the AFC Championship game.
Now, back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. Don't believe me, just watch. Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
That's right. Hour three here on 98.7 ESPN. Well, hour four for me, because, you know, I wake up a little bit earlier than these dudes for fantasy football. But nonetheless, Jordan Renan joins us. He covers the Giants for ESPN. So, Jordan, welcome into the show. Really appreciate it. Let's start off. You know, no Saquon Barkley. The Giants go out. They sign Devontae Freeman. What can people expect out of that backfield today with Freeman and Lewis and Gallman? What can we see? Okay, I think we're working on getting Jordan back. But, gentlemen, I know we touched on it a little bit earlier when we started the show around 8 o'clock. I'm expecting, since Freeman was just signed this week, and I know, Chris, you and I kind of disagree with this. You're expecting a big dose of Devontae Freeman today. I'm expecting a bigger dose from Deion Lewis and working Freeman in slowly, and maybe we'll get that big dose from Freeman in week four. Why is that? Why are you expecting such a big dose of Freeman today?
Well, I think Freeman is more of a lead back. Deion Lewis is more of a change of pace guy, somebody that you use on third downs and in the passing game. I think when you start talking about being able to get the tough yards in between the tackles, do the things that Jason Garrett wants to do in the run game, you need a back that kind of has that ability that Devontae Freeman brings to the table. I think you'll also see some Wayne Gallman, but I wouldn't be shocked to see Devonta Freeman get 12 to 15 carries in this game. It wouldn't shock me at all.
And
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I think the key word what Chris just said was carries. I think there's a difference between playing and carries. I think you give him the ball. I would not have him in there with pass protection because the last thing the Giants need is another injury, especially to Daniel Jones. So I would make sure that he had a couple weeks of reps just to make sure that he knew the system from a pass protection standpoint.
All right, we've got Jordan Renan back with us. Jordan, welcome in. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I heard part of that. Let me chime in a little bit. I'd be surprised if he had 12 to 15 carries. I think that it'll be a little big for what his role is going to be today. I mean, I think he might get 10 to 15 snaps, right? But unless he really starts running the ball really well and they just can't take him out, I mean, 10 to 15 carries, I think is going to be a little bit high for him considering the role I expect. I mean, I expect to see Wayne Gallman start probably, play the rundowns early, have Deion Lewis in that passing game role, a big role for him, sort of like their James White, you know, the way the Patriots use James White. And then you'll see Freeman kind of sprinkled in throughout.
Chris?
No, so Jordan, you're saying that Wayne Gallman is going to get the bulk of the carries in the run game today?
Yeah, I do. I think that. I think that when they get on the field to start, you know, you're going to see Wayne Gallman. And then look, Joe Judge, when he was hired, said, I don't want to hear about what players can't do. I want to hear what they can do, right? And what Wayne Gallman can do is he can run the ball effectively. I mean, I don't know if they – I don't think they trust him fully as a pass catcher or as a blocker. So I don't know if you're going to see him in that role pretty much at all. But what he can do is run the ball, kind of like the Patriots in New England. What did they have? Sony Michel, right? They don't like to use him unless he's going to run the ball. So I kind of expect Wayne Gallman to fall into that role. When he did start – one game last year, he started two, but he got injured in the second. But when he did start and play from start to finish, he ran the ball pretty well. He actually caught a touchdown, too. He ran for, 80-something yards and had a touchdown receiving and running. So I think the Giants are looking at, hey, we could use him in that role. Hey,
Jordan, I know it sounds crazy to think that the Giants would increase the volume of the run game with no Saquon Barkley for the rest of the year, but what are they saying internally about being able to have more balance in the offense? Right now, they're dead last in the National Football League in rush yards and rush attempts. I mean, that can't be what Jason Garrett envisions for this offense moving forward.
No, I think that was more contingent on the competition that they played, right? They knew week one, week two, and even this game in week three that they were going to be facing some really good fronts. Now, it didn't turn out that way, the way everything, unfolded for the 49ers. But, I think this provides them an opportunity. Hey, we don't have to now – their goal is to – we need Saquon. We built this offense around Saquon. We're going to give him the ball and make sure find ways to get him the ball. I think now they have a little more freedom to say, okay, let's do with, whatever we have from the opposition, whereas they don't have to sort of force feed that as much. So that does provide a little more opportunity to say, okay, what do we have? We have Daniel Jones. Let's let him go out there and sling the ball a little bit more. So I think if anything, it probably goes in the other direction.
Hey, Jordan, just going to the other side of the ball here for a minute. What do you think Joe Judge and Patrick Graham have in store today? You're playing a Niner offense, obviously missing quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo, going with Nick Mullins. Their running backs are beat up, and Jedrick McKinnon is going to start. What do you expect from that side of the ball?
Yeah, I expect a little, their focus is going to be to stop the run for these 49ers, right? Sell out to stop the run, say, hey, beat us, play physical. I mean, you know, the way New England and Joe Judge and even Patrick Graham last year in Miami, what they do, a lot of man coverage, go out there, bang them at the line of scrimmage, say, okay, look, you guys beat us, we're going to put, eight, nine guys in the box even. Jabril Peppers is probably not going to, leave that box today as a safety, and the Giants will probably play bigger formations. They played a lot of nickel, a lot of dime the first couple of weeks. I expect to see them change that philosophy a little bit because that's something they talked about, is that they're going to adjust each week. This is a game plan specific league is what Joe Judge said, and I expect the Giants to be like that as well. So what we saw from them maybe in the first 2 weeks defensively, we're going to see a little different version here. You see a lot of more defensive linemen. You'll probably see more of Austin Johnson, who's sort of like another nose tackle that they like to throw in there. And you'll actually probably see their linebackers more. Devontae Downs has been a starter, but that's only a starter by name. So he's their other inside linebacker next to Blake Martinez. He played something like 22 snaps in two games so far. So I think you'll see him probably play more than 22 snaps today alone.
Again, Jordan Manon joining us here on 98.7 ESPN, covers the Giants for ESPN. I'm curious to get your thoughts on what's going on with the field at MetLife Stadium, right? Like, we saw how many players go down with the 49ers, and what I'm hearing, Jordan, is they don't even want to play this game. They don't even want to put their big toe back on this field and on this turf. Have you heard anything in regard to Giants players? Like, are Giants players concerned? I mean, this is their home turf. I mean, you know, 49ers have to play one more game here, and they get to go out back west. How concerned are the Giants players in regard to this turf?
This is why, to me, it seems a little bit of sour grapes, because on the 49ers part, yes, they had a lot of injuries, and it might have been, you know, obviously a lot of some bad luck to that. But the Giants had been here all summer, right? When they went to training camp, all their walkthroughs every day were on this field, and then they scrimmaged on this field a couple times, and then they played the opener on this field on Monday Night Football. And we didn't hear anything from any of the two teams, right? The Steelers or the Giants. I haven't heard anything. I checked in after I heard that, and I talked to one Giants player, and he's like, nah, man, we thought the field was fine from the start. Like, I don't think – I think it's been a little bit overblown because of the magnitude of all the injuries that happened to the 49ers. But it's really surprising, because this is a company that basically does, you know, turf fields all over the country. There's other stadiums they use it. I mean – thousands and thousands. This isn't like a brand new product. It's a little weird to me now. I get it. It might have been a little new and a little sticky to them, but I think in a way it's a little overblown. And but hey, the 49ers are the ones who got beat up beyond belief, so they have a reason to be upset. And what's the easiest way to point finger, I guess, is at the field.
You know, one quick thing on that, you know, because you bring up an interesting point, is we didn't hear anything from the Steelers. Look, they lost Zach Banner in that Monday night game, but I think that's a really good point, Jordan. There's been a lot of exposure to that field. Look, it's unfortunate for anybody that loves the sport what happened, but I thought the Steelers not saying anything was also maybe a variable that was underreported.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we saw anything in that game that would say that the field was poor either, you know? So it really, to me, came out of the blue. And you're like, whoa. We didn't hear anything about that. This is like a totally new thing. But you know, look how decimated they are. You can understand their anger in a way, right? You got to direct it somewhere, because the magnitude of injuries and to significant players that they have is just outrageous.
Jordan, James Bradbury, Dave Gettleman's big ticket free agent, has looked exceptionally well throughout the course of this year.
Yeah.
The two games that he's played in. The corner opposite of Bradbury, not so much. You know, Corey Ballantyne has really, really struggled. I mean, he's given an opposing passer rating of 155.7. What's the Giants' plan with that second corner opposite of James Bradbury? How are they going to shore that up? Is it going to be Corey Ballantyne, or are we going to see some more guys rotating into that spot?
Yeah, I think they look. Here's the thing: anybody who had two eyes knew that this was going to be a problem this summer, right? The Giants knew it. They just had nobody else to put over there. They legitimately didn't. So today I would expect Isaac Yiadom, who they traded for, 3 weeks ago from the Denver Broncos, from a seventh round pick, I would expect him to actually start today over Corey Ballantyne. Like, that's what they thought of the position. Like, they were just waiting for another guy to come in that they could actually put in there and trust the start. It just – something isn't there with Corey Ballantyne. That doesn't click. You know, you wonder, okay, he has the size. He has the speed. He ends up at Washburn. He's a late-round pick. Maybe there's just what's missing here, right? He has that size. He has that speed. He looks like he should be a player. And it just wasn't there. And his coverage the other day, you saw he allowed a touchdown. His coverage was great. It was like 7 seconds. He was on top of the guy. But once the ball went in the air, I mean, the guy just – it was too easy, considering he was covered, for him just to turn around, go to the ball, make a play on the ball, and it was like an easy touchdown. It's like, oh, man. And you know what? This is just an extension of kind of what we saw this summer. So I think the Corey Ballantyne experiment is over, and the Giants are in full search for a guy that can competently start across from James Bradbury.
Hey, Jordan, can I just follow up on that for a second?
Yeah,
Where would Sam Beal have, in your opinion, factored in this discussion?
Yeah, I mean, he certainly would have been in that mix and had a full opportunity to win that job. I think not having him, and even, look, we know what happened with DeAndre Baker, but those guys were going to be, the idea was, okay, we're going to throw all those guys into a pot and see, you know, Corey Ballantyne, Sam Beal, DeAndre Baker, this was, you know, before everything went down with him, like, and see, okay, which one of those guys comes out alive and can start in that spot. And, you know, it just hasn't happened. But let's be honest, Sam Beal hadn't really proven much either throughout his first, what, two years in the league. He basically was in and out of the lineup last year. Was, I don't know, serviceable. But, I don't know. There was nothing to say, that guy is definitely going to be our starter. He's proven he could start in this league. I think there was a big question on that, too, still coming in.
Jordan, last question for me, and it's about Deion Lewis. You said you're expecting a big game from Gallman, but when Saquon went down, Lewis was in for 100% of their offensive snaps. Also, Shepard is out. So, and we know how good Lewis is in the passing game out of the backfield. So, what are your expectations for Deion Lewis? And I ask you selfishly because this is one of my favorite prop bets on the docket today, over under 14.5 receiving yards for Deion Lewis. I think it's at -110. For me, it's a no-brainer. He goes over that. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm actually more bullish on Deion Lewis than anyone in that backfield today, especially when you're talking stats and fantasy. I just think, like you said, Wayne Gallman wasn't even active the other day, right? So I think in a way that show tells you what they kind of feel about him. Like they didn't trust him in the pass blocking, you know, pass catching area. Like, so Deion Lewis was that guy. Now Saquon got injured and he had to then carry the load fully. But unless the Giants are just going to line up and power the ball down the Niners' throat, which I guess is possible, then we're going to see more of, you know, passing game Deion Lewis because they trust him, like you said before, not to get Daniel Jones killed. That's a priority here, a huge priority. So, yeah, to me, he's going to play – he's going to shoulder the biggest load of the snaps, in my opinion. And then, like I said before, Wayne Gallman might have more carries than him, but in my opinion, Deion Lewis is going to lead this team today in snaps for running backs.
Fantastic. Jordan, Go ahead, Chris.
Jordan, last question for me. Evan Engram leads the Giants in targets, but he's third on the team in receiving yards. Do we see the volume – the workload for Evan Engram go up with no Saquon Barkley and no Sterling Shepard in the lineup?
I know this is going to make you nuts, Chris, because you've seen enough of him already. But I do think in a way, because where Sterling Shepard was playing out of the slot, right? Now Golden Tate will take that spot, but Evan Engram has also been playing out of the slot a huge amount already. 67% of his snaps are either outside or in the slot. 44 of his routes, I think 44 out of 77 of his routes run have specifically been from the slot. So they're going to be looking for even more production out of the slot. I think you're even going to see him more in that spot because the Giants are running two or three tight ends at a really high rate. They're running two or three tight ends 21.4% of the time, or 24.1% of the time. The next team is like the Bears at like 13%, and nobody else in the league is over 8%. So we're going to see more of that and more of that of three tight ends, two tight ends with the Giants. And what does that mean? Is it mean you're not going to see a third receiver because there's no Golden Tate, Darius Slayton, and Sterling Shepard. And so that means who's that extra receiver? It's Evan Engram. So in addition to what he was already doing, I see that workload getting even bigger. And let's be honest, Chris and Mike, tell me, if you're a defensive coordinator looking at the Giants right now, who scares you? You know, who scares you that they can make a big play on offense? Is it anyone in that backfield? I doubt it. I mean, Darius Slayton, Golden Tate, yeah, good player, but he's more of a possession guy. So who scares you? Evan Engram is one of those guys. The Giants have to take advantage of that. He has to be their big play guy now. He has to be.
Yeah, the only Slayton's going to have to be the other guy that hopefully emerges for them during the season, but it's a point well taken, which is, you know, we've seen that with Stephon Diggs. You put him into that Bill offense, and he frees up everybody else, and that's the player they're missing right now for the Giants.
Yeah,
Jordan, great job.
Ingram kind of has to be that guy. He has to.
Really appreciate your time this morning, Jordan. Thank you so much. Jordan Renaud, make sure you follow him, all you Giants fans, with all your latest Giants news. Jordan, enjoy the game later on this afternoon. Will be interesting. Like I said, I just with all the injuries with the 49ers, I'm looking at this as a JV football team. And the Giants getting 3.5. Chris, I think I'm with you. I think I'm going to put some money on the 3.5, and I might put some coin on the money line.